This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the tale of dueling endorsements. Former Vice President Mike Pence is supporting the opposite candidate of his former boss in the GOP race for governor. Plus, state election officials debate how to make requesting an absentee ballot online more secure after individuals admit to committing election fraud. And all you need to know ahead of the August primary election on Tuesday. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for August 5th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., let's first start with kind of the dueling endorsements that we previewed a little bit last week about the Republican primary race for governor. Because this week we have two people that used to work in the former administration. We had former Vice President Mike Pence come to rally for Rebecca Clayfish. And then today, later this evening, President Trump will be in Waukesha for his preferred candidate, Tim Michaels. Now, during Pence's visit, he touted Rebecca Clayfish's conservative record. Of course, she served as 8 years as lieutenant governor and basically said, hey, she's the best candidate for this job. Meanwhile, we haven't heard from Trump yet, but this week, Michaels kind of had a little bit of a reversal in support for Trump. He's not officially in for running for president for 2024, but I think a lot of people do predict that to happen. On Monday during a town hall, Michaels did not commit to supporting the former president on the ticket if he is on the ballot. And then on Green Bay during a rally, he recommitted that saying, of course, I'm going to support him. So we don't know exactly what happened in the change of heart, but let's first just take a listen a little bit from the former vice president and Tim Michaels at his rally this week.
There is no candidate for governor in America who is more capable, more experienced, or a more proven conservative than Rebecca Clayfish. Wisconsin and America need Rebecca Clayfish to be the next governor of the great state of Wisconsin.
I wish he was president today and he had four more years. In 2024, if he does, I will support him and I will endorse him. We need somebody like that in Washington, D.C.
First, this is not the first time Michaels has flopped on certain issues. And before we kind of get into that a little bit, I want to talk about the lineup. Let's kind of preview this Trump event, because a lot of speakers that are going to be speaking before the former president are all people that are kind of the anti-Voss crew that are heading there, JR.
So the question is, will the rally be more pro-Michaels or more anti-Robin Voss? Because you have Adam Steen, who's running against Robin Voss in primary on Tuesday, endorsed by Trump this week, speaking. You have Janelle Branchen, the chair of the campaign's elections committee, who's also supporting Adam Steen, has been a critic of Robin Voss. So what's the message going to be? By the way, this rally is happening in Waukesha County. Where are Republicans bleeding the most support among regular constituents because Donald Trump? In suburban Milwaukee, i.e. the Waukesha County area. It had made more sense to Trump to Green Bay or to Wausau, for example, more where he is kind of still beloved by the Republican base. So that's going to be an interesting thing. How does this play for Michaels, right? So my argument has been for years, after talking to operatives, endorsements only matter if they come with money or infrastructure. These kind of endorsements matter most when you get the media bump out of the rally, right? Ted Cruz endorsed Clayfish. Hey, great. Ted Cruz is not in Wisconsin. Hey, maybe they'll change over the weekend or come Monday. But if Ted Cruz is not coming, Ted Cruz is not doing a whole lot for Rebecca Clayfish. Here you have Pence doing something for Clayfish, Trump doing something for Michaels, although Trump may do something for himself at the same time with this rally, right? So I'm wondering how much of a bump Michaels gets out of this, especially where it's being held and who is speaking at this thing.
And I think we know a central theme that will be talked about as well is decertifying the 2020 election. Everyone else who is speaking to, you mentioned Branchen, Steen, Derek Van Orden. I mean, all of these guys have really embraced President Trump's falsehoods and no proof that there's been widespread voter fraud. We also know legal experts, constitutional experts say there is absolutely no pathway to decertification. That is where Voss is also openly talking about his primary opponent. But, you know, Michaels also, in previous debates, said that that's not his top priority for decertification, and then once again kind of changed tone again during a WISN town hall on Monday. So I don't know if he's getting phone calls from Trump, but he has been kind of flip-flopping on certain issues.
It is. People have talked this week, so it's a sign of a candidate who's not great on the stump just yet. He still could be getting his legs, even though it's been his end of April. Mm-hmm. You know, he hadn't been running, hasn't run for office since 2004, so there's still some moments where we kind of go, that wasn't the best thing he possibly could have done for himself at that moment. And with Trump, I mean, Voss is a great example. Either you embrace him all the way or you're going to make him mad, right? Robin Voss has tried to placate Donald Trump for months and months and months. This week proves you can never placate Donald Trump unless you do exactly what Donald Trump wants you to do. So for Michaels, you know, how do you approach that dynamic? And then two, if he wins on Tuesday, does he embrace Trump after Tuesday? Because Trump numbers aren't great in Wisconsin. With the general population now, Republicans still, yeah, pretty good. But a general election audience does not have great numbers. Do you want to be the Trump candidate come November?
And we just want to see how powerful these endorsements do carry on Tuesday. You know, Rebecca Clayfish has clearly been on the campaign trail much longer, and then Michaels swooped in and kind of took that front-runner position. Of course, the polling, the only polling that we really have is the Marquette Law School poll that came out almost 2 months ago now that had them neck and neck. Michaels at 27, Clayfish at 26, of course, within the margin of error. So I think everyone predicts to be a tight race, but a lot of people are anticipating to actually see what those numbers are and whether or not Trump can get another victory with an endorsed candidate. He has a pretty good record in other primaries that we saw on Tuesday and even before that. There's a lot of states that hold primaries much earlier before we do. Let's also move on to Wisconsin Elections Commission. We talked about this last week as two individuals specifically admitted to, you know, going on the My Vote system is where you can online request an absentee ballot, track your absentee ballot. Two individuals admitted that they went into that system, they found a loophole, and requested ballots on other people's behalf. So WEC, of course, addressed this issue. Now, they had some new statistics, Jared, that we'll get into a little bit, but also what the commission did this week is they deadlocked, no surprise there, three Republicans, three Democrats, on a motion to eliminate 2016 guidance that allowed local clerks to fill in missing ballot information, addresses, I should be specific, on absentee ballot envelopes. That's been an issue that they've been debating for a very long time. Let's first take a listen to Republican Commissioner Bob Spindell and Democratic Commissioner Ann Jacobs. They're going to be debating about recommending how to make this system a little bit more secure and how these individuals were able to do this. So let's take a listen.
I certainly don't agree that anybody should go into the system and doing this, that was the wrong approach. But I think we need to do something about it. It was pointed out to us. It's the top story in the news here in Wisconsin. It's made national news everywhere. And I'd like to make a motion that the Wisconsin Election Commission staff provide us with a plan to strengthen entry into the My Vote system. And I'll just add a few things, such as add the last four digits of Social Security number, driver's license, set up an account, and report back to us within 2 weeks or sooner, so we may implement this more secure system for the as soon as possible for the November 2022 elections.
What I'm saying is it doesn't make any sense to be doing this before November. Staff has a lot of work to do. We have two elections coming up, and there's nothing we can do before November. And the chutzpah of complaining about a lack of faith in our elections when you're running around the state holding town halls declaring that the 2020 election was rigged is astonishing. So I am deaf to the complaint that we're somehow fomenting a lack of faith in the election when literally one of our commissioners has a handout declaring the election having been rigged.
So, of course, Jacobs there was arguing that the timeline is too short to make any changes on the My Vote system. Bob Spindell has been urging them to do something, maybe a Social Security number, to make it more difficult. But I don't think any changes on that front are going to happen. Of course, they are supporting the DOJ's investigation to hold these individuals accountable. And on Thursday, we also got some statistics of how many individuals may have had this happen to, JR. Yeah. Roughly about 4,000, I believe.
The commission has been taking steps to try to assure people that the system is secure. So their argument is whether you're going through My Vote, you're requesting a ballot online or email, it's the same thing. You go through the same steps to do this. There's no difference with the website. They said that they sent 3,962 postcards to people who asked for an absentee ballot to be sent to an address other than the one on the registration. Those all could be legitimate, except for the ones we know are fraudulent from these guys. It's just an example of like how often this has happened, this election. So we shall see if there are any more fraudulent ones that come out. The challenge is, how does the Elections Commission agree on a system or a fix when they're split and we are less than a week out from election? oh, by the way, you've got differing opinions about whether these guys should be prosecuted. Now the guy, Harry Waite, who did this, wants to be prosecuted. He claims that if he's prosecuted, he can do a discovery on the Elections Commission and blow this thing open. I'm not aware, when you're the target of a criminal prosecution, being able to subpoena the records of a government body. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, said that many times. But this is more of an example of activists who think there's something wrong with how we do elections, trying to find little things they think are vulnerabilities to make a point of a large problem. I am not sure this is a large problem, because if you're going to go after the website, why not the email system or fax system? Why not go after that as well? Yeah, maybe it should be changed. But this by itself is not a huge vulnerability that we've seen so far, Wisconsin elections. Now, however, they've highlighted it, so you might have more people asking. There are other safeguards in the system. For example, you must have, unless you're claiming definitely confined status, you must have an absentee or your voter ID on file to get your absentee ballot sent to you. So if you're going to commit this fraud, you must know somebody who's not asked for a ballot already, who has a voter ID on file, unless they're definitely confined, and make sure you meet those steps before you get your ballot. So, or their ballot, I should say. So there are some issues there to, you know, be aware of. Plus, too, if my wife, for example, voted absentee, if somebody had asked for her ballot before she went, or I haven't voted absentee yet, when I show up on Tuesday to go vote, if they say you have voted already, there's going to be a red flag right there, because that's not going to be right. So there's some safeguards in this system, but yeah, it could be a vulnerability, it could be addressed in some way, shape, or form.
And there was a lot of people who voted absentee during the pandemic, so it is a larger, I guess, scope of people that you could try and guess on the system, but you also have to know their date of birth and their address. So it's there, like you said, there are safeguards in place. Plus, if they do try to make any changes, yeah, sure, we're 1 week away from, not even, I should say, days away from the August primary, but, you know, even from then, are they going to make changes right before a general election? I just don't see that happening. But, you know, you never know. Things could happen. But also, funding's always an issue. The legislature usually has to sign off a lot of things that WEC decides to do. So remains to be seen of what happens. And if Harry Waite ever is prosecuted and if he goes to jail, he clearly wants the attention. He wants this out there. He wants to, you know, work with prosecutors as well. We just don't know. As of yesterday, I did text him. He said he hasn't been picked up yet. So
it also underscores that if we had an honest adult conversation about all these issues, you could maybe reach a compromise. That's not what's going on. There are issues with how elections are administered in Wisconsin. There always are. That could be worked out. We are doing publicity stunts and partisan standoffs rather than having an adult conversation about what could be done to make election administration better in Wisconsin.
That's politics sometimes today, JR.
Shocker.
Also, another preview story, but I think we'd be safe to say, talking about this next topic, it's going to be happening, a vote today in Chicago. RNC officials are going to be officially selecting a city to host the Republican National Convention in 2024. We already know that the site selection committee recommended Milwaukee, and also this week, Nashville completely bowed out. Basically, Nashville had to pass what Milwaukee also did, this framework agreement, basically letting delegates know that, yes, we're ready, we can host this type of event, and they didn't. So Friday will be the big decision in Chicago. I believe it was sometime this afternoon we'll make it official, but you never know. It's something we just need to make sure it happens. And, you know, it will be great economic boom, and, of course, it's going to be during a big, crucial election year where Republicans are really going to want to have that those suburbs of Milwaukee and Milwaukee get fired up for them, especially.
Nashville officials didn't seem that excited about it, in part because, to them, that is a kind of a tourism mecca, and you're not getting a big boom out of it because you're actually displacing other people who would come to Nashville that time of year. Milwaukee, excited about it. Again, like we talked a little while ago, a few weeks ago about this, I want to know who the nominee is, and does this convention look forward or look back? If Donald Trump is a nominee, can he resist the temptation of having a national audience and not talk about Wisconsin is lost by 21,000 votes, which he claims is not a loss, but a victory in Wisconsin? Can he resist that temptation and bog down his message into looking backward, not looking forward?
And, of course, you know, Milwaukee officials I've talked to all week are very excited because they didn't really get that convention we all, you know, many people had hoped for to have here because of the economic boom. I mean, you could be Republican or Democrat. People were excited about it because of what it could do for the city and the state as a whole, as a big economic driver and tourism, you know, big dollar signs especially.
Republicans, a little twist of the knife. The Dems didn't come in person in 2020. They're coming to Wisconsin.
Yes. All right. Now we're going to get to our big primary rundown, I guess we can say. We're going to go by some specific races, talk about what's at stake, and then in the Stockport, we are going to have more races that we're going to highlight. Of course, we're going to start with the biggest one on the ticket that all eyes are on now is the governor's race. Of course, it's basically a two-person race. We can't forget there is State Representative Tim Rantham that is still there, but he has been polling very, very low. It's a two-person race. They have been in dead heat. They both, of course, have had big players come out. And we just saw Michaels this week take the step of going negative in attack ads after just, you know, a few days ago and almost the entire campaign saying, I'm not going to go negative. You know, that's not the route I want to go. Clayfish has already been up on air, though, attacking him. So his campaign manager said today, well, we're going to fight back.
So big news was the reports that show that Michaels has now put $12 million own money in the race. Gives you an idea how much he's committed, what he's spent on this thing. It's not only Michael is going negative, it's also Club for Growth Action. So now Club for Growth Action and both of the ads mention China. So the backstory is Clayfish led a trade mission for the Walker administration to China in December of 2014. She came back kind of recounting what things that she heard from Chinese officials there. The Club for Growth Action accused her of spouting Chinese propaganda in its ad. I mean, you know, you can be creative with these things, what you say in them. The significance is 3 weeks ago, it seemed like Clayfish was dead in the water, that Michaels had all this momentum. He was building up a lead. They were talking about how they're up by 9 points. Now she seems to have, like, gotten back into this thing, whether it's neck and neck or one of us up or the other, I don't know. Like I've told you before, I don't really trust August polling. Right. I've seen some bad polling in primary races before. That said, if you're Michaels, are you going negative unless you have to? Especially you've been touting about how you're going to be positive the whole time, right? So there's a reason why he's doing this and why Club for Growth is doing what it's doing. Now, Michaels folks say, hey, we've been hit with a stream of negative ads from Clayfish since, you know, and her the PAC supporting since early July. This is just us responding because you can't let that stuff go unchecked. But if he's up by 15 points, I don't think he'd be doing it. Also, for Tony Evers, you get to watch these two guys go at it, hand-to-hand combat for the final week. Good for you. Evers raising their $1 million in the pre-primary period. He's stockpiling cash. Latest ad this week was education. And I'm not the flashiest guy, folks, but right. I'll tell you what's right for Wisconsin, especially when it comes to education. So expect it to be the Evers message from now until November of, I'm not this big flashy partisan guy, but I'm trying to do what's right. That's going to be his kind of key phrase the rest of this campaign.
And you want to know, he's kind of sticking it real. I mean, that's kind of, he's not this big, shouty type of personality. You know, the school superintendent came from the school background. Seems like he's a soft-spoken teacher you would have in third grade, wants to help the students, but he's just telling it like it is. Let's move on to the lieutenant governor's race, and holy smokes, we know there's a lot of candidates, but once we pull up this full screen and kind of put it into perspective for people here, of course, we have two Democrats and eight Republicans running.
All you know about are Roger Roth and Pat Tess on the Republican side. Roth spent $300,000 in the pre-primary period, which was July 1st, July 25th. Teston spent $34,000. This is an interesting one. It's a smaller version of the governor's race, okay? You have a guy in Pat Teston who, like Clayfish, spent a long time building up, doing the legwork, going to county party events, connecting with grassroots, trying to build that network support. Then you have Roth, who came in late with a lot of resources, much like Michaels. Roth is up on TV in Green Bay, Milwaukee. Got a group doing mail for him. He's on radio. Like, he's got the media presence that anybody would want to have that kind of a race. So you think he has the edge there. On the Democratic side, Sarah Rodriguez, state representative, freshman, she also has gotten up earlier, a little bit of advantage. Studies show in a Democratic primary, female candidates often have an advantage. There are a lot of female primary voters for Democrats. Mm-hmm. They're not high-profile races, so sometimes you're going to go, well, this sounds like the person I like. That helps. Studies show that. I think Sarah and Roger have the advantage, but I'm watching Teston. Does he have the ability with that legwork to overcome the financial disparity that he's faced?
All right. Attorney General race. Of course, we're talking about the Republicans because AG Call does not have an opponent, Democrat opponent. Eric Toney, Adam Jarko. Eric Toney just had another hit today based off some text messages and some of his past, kind of criticizing Donald Trump. Adam Jarko, former state lawmaker, has no background as a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. That's kind of Eric Toney's plus there. I don't know. What is your prediction?
This has been a mystery talking to people. Jarko has spent $227,000 in the pre-primary period. Toney spent less than $11,000. Jarko also has Americans for Prosperity doing stuff for him and other groups. I think it's north of $600,000. Now, in a statewide race, that is not a huge amount of money. But it's a way more communication than Eric Toney can do with his rather smaller war chest compared to Jarko. Toney, when he gets before people, like county party events, the state convention, he does well when he can connect. You can't connect to a lot of people with $11,000 going out the door in a four-week period. So people think that Jarko should have the advantage. But he does really poorly in those caucus votes. The state convention vote was really surprising how well that Toney did. So people are kind of going, what's going on there? Why is that not doing better for Jarko? Is he turning off people or what? Is it the background, not being a prosecutor? Either way, that one I talked about, Republicans, it's a mystery to them. They think Jarko should do better, but they're just not ready to commit to him winning because of that background issue.
Right. And this is a much smaller field, too, compared to the lieutenant governor's race and whatnot. And there's no polling to indicate. So, like you and I both know, we make calls. We kind of see. I know Eric Toney did one press conference in the state capitol. We haven't really seen Adam Jarko around this area. But, of course, we know that's it's more of a blue town here in Madison. That's definitely a race that I'm curious to see who has an edge in.
Also, Chippewa Falls attorney in that race, but she's not really raised much.
That's correct.
Not within a factor so far, who I can see in that race.
All right. Stock picks, we're still kind of talking about some previews. Rising, I think, no doubt, is Mandela Barnes after he, I guess, everyone cleared the field and endorsed him last week. It was quite a big surprise there that the top three candidates all fell off and put his backing behind him.
The big development this week was he raised $1.1 million in the week after they got out. Mandela has raised good money as a challenger, but not like John Fetterman money, not like big time what you're seeing Val Demings down in Florida. This may be the opening of the wallets for the Democratic donors because the field is consolidated. I was on vacation last week, but odd time to go, everything that happened. But we've talked about for weeks, if you're Galuski and Lazary, there's no path to victory. There was no path to victory unless you're after Barnes. And they never did. Now, talking to people in retrospect, there's a thought of the challenge is, we talked about this too, if you go negative, you risk alienating people. Mm-hmm. So they kept seeming like to wait for the person to go negative on Barnes, and neither of them did. If an outside group had done it, that would have been better. The added risk if you go negative is, if you go negative, do you help yourself or your rival? So for Lazary, let's just pick him for example, if you'd gone negative, you'd have to have an ad where you go negative on Barnes and talk positive about you. That links the attack that much more to you as a candidate, which risks alienating people that much more. Same as Sarah done it, right? Nelson never had the funds to really be a factor in that primary. Lazary had the money to stay in through Tuesday, no problem. Galuski.
She launched like a seven-figure ad like the final 2 weeks too, and that quickly went off air too after she dropped out. Trying to capitalize on that debate.
Her strategy was kind of odd in that she went up early and spent a lot of money and went dark for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I think it was like 6-7 weeks she was off air.
She may have been expecting Emily's List was going to do something for her. Remember, they endorsed her campaign. Groups can't coordinate with campaigns, but campaigns sometimes make assumptions about like what you make a choice to go up early, move your numbers off of the Nelson line toward the Lazary Mandela line, and then hope Emily's List or something else comes in and helps you out. But there wasn't that closing argument. There wasn't a sustained media buy for her to kind of make her a factor. Lazary, getting out, also dropped $600,000 on a TV ad against Ron Johnson. That wins him some kind of like kudos from Democrats. He had the money to stand, again, but they had no path to victory without that negative attack on Barnes. Now, Barnes, the question is he been vetted enough? Republicans are not going to hold back on Mandela Barnes and the issues that he's had or what they think are issues to go after him with. They're going to open the floodgates. The question is, when is that going to start? And with Ron Johnson, though, he does things like this week, talks about Medicaid and Social Security. They should, maybe should be budgeted differently. You look at the funding every year rather than making it mandatory. Well, that, you know, words of Democrats, puts in the chopping block. You know, that's their verbiage you're going to hear. He keeps giving Democrats fodder. An election cycle where he should have an advantage money-wise, he should have a decent environment because of Biden in the White House, he's giving them fodder to make it harder for him to win re-election. And it's kind of puzzling why he does that sometimes.
Right, absolutely. He's making a lot of headlines.
Yeah.
Mixed this week is Doug LaFollette, based on some funding numbers as well.
Doug LaFollette spent $86 in the month of July to win re-election. And all $86 were credit card processing fees with Act Blue, which is a clearinghouse for Democrats for online donations. Now, the thing, though, is his rival, Alexis Sabre, she didn't spend enough money to communicate to a statewide audience. It's like $6,000 in digital ads, a little more than that, more maybe coming the final weeks. But this is the challenge you face somebody in a race that nobody really knows these people. How do you raise the funds to communicate effectively against an incumbent who first went to office in 1974 to kick him out of office when he has the golden name Wisconsin politics? That's a challenge. So Doug, while he's not doing much, he told me he's relying on a virtual campaign, social media, Zoom calls.
Zooms, yep.
Alexis Sabre's got a challenge to knock off somebody who's got that name ID. Now, on the Republican side, Amy Loudenbeck is doing better financially than Jay Schroeder. What's interesting is Schroeder has a PAC running, doing mail pieces, attacking Loudenbeck, accusing her of being part of the problem of election integrity. Now, Republicans created the Elections Commission, right? They thought it was a great idea back then. Now they hate it.
Now they hate it, yeah.
She also approved funding for it in this last budget because she's on the Finance Committee. There is an attack there to be had in Loudenbeck that she's part of the Elections Commission machine, which she's been a critic of the agency and that kind of stuff. But I'm watching, does that have enough legs to kind of sink into people? It's, again, low turnout, low-profile race where the governor's race drives turnout. Also for LaFollette and Alexia, with Mandela and the Senate race pretty much take care of. What drives Democrats to the polls on Tuesday? It would have been a great gauge to look at if you had a contested Senate primary and contested Gov primary on the Dem side, Republican side, where was the enthusiasm, right? I would have loved to have seen those numbers. Well, now, I mean, like, what Democrats' enthusiasm about Tuesday, because there's nothing there.
There's nothing there, yeah.
Unless you're a huge Doug LaFollette fan, and I'm sure they're out there. I want to turn off for him, but
there's a lot of traditional voters who will go regardless,
yeah, go regardless,
or they already voted too and forgot to spoil their ballot. Who knows?
But you're not getting that like one-on-one look at where people right. are, they're enthusiastic or not.
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes left. Michael Gableman is falling this week. There was back-to-back Dane County judges, one from last week, one from Monday, that ordered a lot of money in attorney fees. I know the second one is what is about awarded American Oversight at $160, roughly $1,000 in attorney fees. And but the problem here is, JR, that's just another bill us taxpayers are going to have to pay.
So I had him at between what Gableman spent and legal bills for outside attorneys in the lawsuits with his investigation, he was at $1 million in like mid-June from a vacation in June. We're talking now $98,000 in one attorney's fees, $160 in the other. We're now getting to $1.25 million. I haven't gotten any bills in a month and a half. I'm waiting for those to come in to kind of update a number. The tab is getting expensive. And oh, by the way, Michael Gableman, who was talking about how we should decertify or lawmakers should take a hard look at decertifying the 2020 election, was privately telling Robin Voss, you can't do it. So American Oversight, which has filed these four lawsuits seeking records, released a memo showing what Gableman's telling Voss in private.
It's and then going out in public and not saying that, yeah.
Not a great look for him. Although Trump is still a big fan of Gableman in his statement endorsing Adam Steen, highlighted how Gableman was found. But just this investigation continues to be problematic. It's costing taxpayers, and you're seeing that what's happening in public is not what's happening in private.
And we know the bill is likely going to keep going up, and we have no end in sight of when this investigation is. We do have a new revised contract, but could that contract be renewed again? It's been multiple times that Voss has signed these extensions. So once another thing that will just keep us on the edge of our seat to let people know just how much we'll be on the hook for. That will do it this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.